But when you look at those numbers, when you look at, Kaz, like you mentioned, that Netflix model, which is we have to have a churn to attract new viewers. The movies, the vast majority of these movies are a product. They are.
Are you
not
saying that Jennifer Lopez's Mech Warrior movie Atlas is not going to be very good because it's part of the churn?
Yes.
Don't say that. I got to watch it on Thursday. I couldn't even watch the trailer. I had to stare at the poster whilst lining up what I got to watch, and that was bad enough.
Yes.
I didn't even know it was about Mech Warriors. I'm already dreading this. Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Movies and TV Podcast for May 2024. Tonight I'm joined by Tom Davis.
Hello.
Mark Costello.
Hello, hello.
And Simon Crust.
I need me a Quark watch.
You can't have it, it's mine.
Oh, no, but...
For our May Movies and TVs podcast, we're going to run through our usual top 10 list of recommended watches. And then...
Hey, that was cool.
Nice. And then deep dive into our topic of the month, which is, are studios making too many movies?
Spoiler alert, yes.
But first, some competitions. Hardware competitions win the Project T2 Superphono turntable worth 559, courtesy of Peter Tyson and Henley Audio. If you want crystal clear sound from your precious record collection and need an all-in-one solution, or even want to upgrade the phono stage in your integrated amplifier, this could well be the answer you were looking for. Complete with this legendary Sumiko Rainier cartridge and beautifully finished with a glass platter and the option of three classy colorways, gloss, black, satin white, or walnut.
It's a lot of words
there. Competition ends at midnight on 2nd of June 2024. I'd have loved if the competition ended before the podcast went live. After all that.
Good God, I'm Kaz Harlow.
Previous winners, J Rule won a set of Kef SLX LSX 2 LC wireless hi-fi speakers worth $899.
Good work. That's an excellent prize. Yeah. Well done, J Rule.
New patrons, Arthur Yarwood, Leon Rod, and Donard Leonard.
Welcome.
Nice. That's a mouthful. Bought us a copy, Repo Man 666, Beer Bottles, George Van, and someone.
Thank you very much. Good.
Someone gets
very much.
Points for username. Yeah, that's that's good. I hope it was oat milk. Right. Without further ado, best titles we've watched in May 2024. A quick shout out for the end of Sugars as... Anyone here finish Sugar?
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah. So I'm not going to get into spoilers, but Sugar is a noir with Colin Farrell, which takes a very twisty twist.
Yeah, it goes so far left, it goes back on itself.
I quite liked it, but it will be divisive. Yeah. But get it watched. It's worth it for the twist alone. It's... Yeah, I'll be interested to see if they renew that for a second season. Also, quick shout out for Walking Dead. It's the spin-off, The Ones Who Lived. I'm saying this as someone who gave up on The Walking Dead a long time ago and then and then watched all of the seasons right the way through to the finish. So I'm now quite happy to have finally seen the first episode of The Ones Who Lived on Sky Preview. It's coming to Sky 31st of May. We'll have a review of that. And it's nice to have.
So, sorry, Kaz, on that.
It's back.
I've got a problem of nomenclature here.
Yes.
It's The Walking Dead.
Yes.
The show's called The Ones Who Lived. So
The Ones Who Live? The Ones
humans?
Who Live, maybe. The Ones Who Live.
So it's not The Walking Dead, because they're the ones who died.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I gave up after episode 3 of season 1. So
what? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's mental. I mean, I foolishly ditched it before Negan, got back into it to watch it to Negan, which was easily a high point, and then suffered through quite a lot to an enjoyable finish. I was happy getting to the end. But it missed Rick.
Rick.
Yeah, Rick Rhymes. Yeah.
There's words. I understand them.
Andrew Lincoln, the guy who was the star of The Walking Dead.
I know.
It missed him when he disappeared. And The Ones Who Lived? I don't know. It is enjoyable because it's tied up his story. Anyway.
So he lived. So Rick lived.
Oh, my God. At the time of recording...
Oh, God damn it. I need to know now.
We have not yet seen Furiosa. It could easily end up being a pick of the month. So just saying that. And I haven't finished watching The 8 Show, which is the latest Korean addictive, binge-worthy Netflix Squid Game-style show about a group of people trapped in a building on 8 floors earning money for every hour they stay there. It's strangely addictive. It's not very, very it. Super, super weird. You'll never watch it, Mark.
No.
You'll never watch it, whether I say it's good or bad.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. In our top 10 list, we have Dark Matter, which is on Apple, which is, for me, was too close to Constellation and yes, not in a good
It's definitely misnamed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should be Doesn't Matter. Come on.
Look at that. That's why we pay his exorbitant day rate.
I mean, look, it could turn out to be great, but it's another one of these parallel universe Schrodinger's cat thingies. And it didn't... I tell you what really didn't work for me in episode one. The main character is teaching theoretical physics and Schrodinger's cat to his class of students. And he's trying to explain it to them and they're all completely ignoring him. And then his very predicament takes on an extremely Schrodinger's cat-like situation in his life. And yet he takes the whole of episode one to come to the conclusion that he's in one of his own theoretical physics lessons.
And all I could hear is Brad Pitt going, "What's in the box?" all the way through the first three episodes.
You watched all three episodes of this?
Yeah, I've watched all three episodes. Yeah.
And is it good? Did it get better?
Toilet.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's all right. But like you said, I knew exactly who the man behind the mask was in the first episode. And it took him three episodes to work it out.
Which doesn't make any sense because he's a theoretical physicist lecturer. And
he's a dumbass is what he is.
Yeah, but as a narrative ploy, they should have given him a different job. Because it didn't make any sense that he was the one who wasn't clued in while the audience was going, "Hey, catch up." And it was a similar thing in Constellation. It felt very much like the narrative was constantly falling behind what the audience was doing. Anyway, I'm not really sure why they did that. I enjoyed The Dry 2. Has anyone seen The Dry 2?
I've seen The Dry 1.
Okay, great. All right, well, there you go. Eric Bana, whatever happened to him? Well, he's doing the dry movies. And they're quite enjoyable. And they're on Sky. And that's good for Sky. Bodkin, Netflix, podcasters, true crime. It works. Quirky Irish town. A group of podcasters go there.
Aren't they all?
I've seen the picture for that on the screen.
It's really weird. The people described it as...
Did you say true life?
True crime.
True crime. So what has actually happened?
Not true life. No, it's podcasters doing like a true crime docudrama thing into a cold case. It's not. It's not that it really happened. Or I hope
that. What an original idea! A TV show about podcasters doing true crime investigations into a cold case. You say, Kaz? I've never heard of such malarkey. Dear Christ! Are they making too many TV shows? Because quite frankly.
You wait until we get to Arachnophobia.
Jesus.
Mother's Instinct, classy sort of...
Podcasters, true crime.
Hitchcockian style drama. Quite dark. It's got Euro influence. It's a remake of a French language Belgian film. Anne Hathaway is phenomenal in it. Her and Jessica Chastain. It's a hard watch, but it's pretty suspenseful. It's pretty good. Sting. Sting, 7 out of 10, Mark?
Yeah, against my better judgment, absolutely. It was good. I quite enjoyed it, although it made one slightly fatal error. And yes,
showed the spider.
You can only have a slight fatal error, and that is there wasn't enough alien spider man-eating beastie in the alien spider man-eating beastie film. Okay. All the rest of it was really good. They got all the hard bit really right. Great characterization, some interesting family dynamics, good actors, fun vibe, sense of humor. Just give me some sodding spider. Well, yeah, I actually quite enjoyed it. I came away not hating it. So 7 out of 10.
Good praise there.
Do you know what? Maybe if I'd watched it before I'd watched Breathe, it wouldn't have got 7. Well, fortunately, I watched Breathe.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Set your standards pretty low.
At least half of those marks should just be because it's not Breathe.
Oh, yeah. I was going to put Breathe in here.
Yeah, why?
What? No.
No. So, Love Lies Bleeding. Good. Kristen Stewart. It's a kind of a Nicholas Winding Refn-esque noir. That's worth a look. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Tom, 7. Were you saying 7?
Yeah, it's real fun. Like, I went into it expecting it to just be like, eh. Like, I quite enjoyed the last 3. I thought they were overall pretty good movies that did some interesting, like, morally complex action movie stuff, which is good. This one doesn't do any morally complex stuff, but it does do, like, fantasy action really well. It's like an old-style Planet of the Apes movie, which is... It was just fun. It was good.
Cool. Nice. Anyone here actually watch Tokyo Vice? This is just depressing going into this.
No.
Okay. Well, for those who did out there listening, hopefully, return for a second
season.
Return for a second season after a horrible cliffhanger of an ending in the first season to tie up some loose ends. It's just as good as it was, and it's really classy telly. If surprised me, John Krasinski's sort of strangely advertised and promoted family movie. I mean, I don't know. I had it in mind to write it off like La La Crocodile, but I ended up seeing it with the entire family, and pretty much everyone was in tears. I was bawling. It's got proper Disney Pixar ability to, well, classic Disney Pixar. I'm not sure they do it anymore, but that ability to suddenly hit you hard, which I wasn't expecting from this.
Nice.
I was pleasantly surprised. But, you know, if you go into it utterly cold and cynical and without any kids, you'll probably be like, I don't know. Depends how cynical you're feeling. But it got me in the feels. Sympathizer, right. Now, this is upcoming. It is Park Chan-wook's adaptation of a Pulitzer Prizing novel about Vietnamese kind of counter-spy, a North Vietnamese plant in South Vietnam working with a very colourful CIA.
That all sounds great.
I mean, it gets even better. It's Robert Downey Jr. playing like 6 characters. As probably from those who are actually watching the podcast can see from the picture behind me, that's actually a lot of Robert Downey Jr.'s.
Really?
And a spy in the center. Yes. It's all Robert Downey Jr.'s. Yes.
Okay.
And the spy in the center. And he's great. The one at the back, like there, is pure Eastwood. Proper grit teeth Eastwood. And Downey Jr. nails it. And
it looks like Rob Brydon.
It does.
He's having an absolute ball. There are points at which you're like, it goes wild with how many different characters he's playing.
If he does Rob Brydon, I'm in.
It's obviously because he's CIA and he's got different CIA personas.
Oh, okay.
But it's very, very playfully done, and he is wild. He is so involved in his own characters that it's scary.
What's it called?
It's called The Sympathizer. It's coming to Sky shortly. I think the 27th.
Monday.
Are we going for the 27th? Yeah, 27th of May. There we go.
Even think about watching that.
Nah, you won't. It'll be too good for you.
No, do you know what? I'm going to watch it just to piss you off.
Yeah, you will watch and the then first tell 4 you minutes didn't. And go, right. Yeah,
and say,
it
was really crap.
Right. And I turn back to the family Stallone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Don't mock the family Stallone.
I will not, or he'll call me fat. are we the podcast discussion of the month?
Was that the top 10?
That was the top 10.
So number one was this. I forgot the name of it already.
Oh my God. What?
The Sympathizer.
Interestingly enough, Si, we don't do numbers anymore. Numbers don't matter.
Sympathizer. Oh my God. I'm going to have to do some serious promotion for this. I would have thought Park Chan-wook, Rob Downey Jr.
We're all there. We're all there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You've
just incompetently missold it to us. That's all.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Are we making too many movies? Is the big clickbait line for this? Mm. And so the question, which I never really thought about before investigating this sort of podcast theme, is how many movies are being made? And we pulled up various different lists, and the best we could come up with was this list from a site called The Numbers, which appears to pull US released movies in two forms: those that are US made and those that are worldwide made but still only released in the US. So the numbers that we're getting here are still restricted to those in the US versus, for example, if you were to pull a more global figure, you do get a rising increase on this number, particularly taking into account things like Bollywood, which of course this doesn't. But the numbers are still very interesting. We looked through in this, and you know, depending when you were born and what years you remember, but the 80s saw, you know, hundreds to 200s of films being made all the way through to, you know, the 90s. 1994 is a telling one, 263. And I'm going to jump forward from 263 films made in 1994. And I'm going to preface that with those are the ones released in the US. Jumping forward to 2022 to get 4,777 films. irrespective of, you know, whether people are going to pick apart the accuracy of these numbers, the point of this is that the number of movies being made now is somewhat ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
In practical terms, you could, in the 80s and 90s, feasibly watch every film that you wanted to watch in a year quite comfortably, miss a few off, and still watch a few classics from the past in a year. And then from 2000s onwards, this became largely impossible. And in whatever, 22, you'd have to watch like five new films a day to watch like half of the movies that are released. That's
bonkers.
Crazy numbers. And
that's so, nearly as many movies as Mark watches.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he watches older films that are out on Blu-ray and are out on 4K. Imagine stripping all of those out of your diet, Mark, and just watching films like Breathe, like 10 films like Breathe a day. He's gone silent. I've got no words for that.
I'm just envisaging a world where I don't get to watch 1970s Pete Walker horror movies.
Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, to be fair, that's all I've watched for the last week anyway. That's all I can remember. So, you know.
Coffin Joe all over again.
No, because I didn't watch all the Coffin Joe ones. I am watching all the Pete Walker ones because they're all actually really good. Apart from 88 films, if you're listening, you only sent me 6 of the 7, you dipshits.
I mean, a bit harsh. They may well be listening, and
they're not listening. but yes, too many films.
Okay.
You think?
Yeah, well, that's crazy.
I mean, it is, isn't it?
But why?
Well, because the money-making business of it has risen exponentially. They make movies for $30 million on average, whereas in the past it was like
I think it's more basic than that. It's now quite easy to make a film.
Yeah. Yes, that's probably true.
Yeah, make it on an iPhone. The cheapness now of a... exactly. I was going to say the cheapness of a digital media to make a film, particularly iPhones, which are now being used. means that if you've got a bunch of amateurs, they can now have a fairly professional looking film.
You also have quadruple, quintuple the number of outlets for commissioning movies as well.
And the costs of getting those films on, in essence, distribution costs have dropped to zero with digital.
Yes.
So you've got two of those massive barriers of entry that you had back in the day. The cost of making the film and the cost of distributing the film have both literally dropped
and
away.
And I would say because of the streaming wars, there is a big demand. Like every single one of the streamers wants to have more content, even if they have to beg, borrow and steal to get it.
True.
Want it.
But interestingly enough, who's driving the demand?
No, I think
I don't think it's the end user, which is messed up.
I think you're right, Mark. But in a way, it's the theoretical end user. What Netflix must figure is they have to release 5 movies a week. That they don't care how or what the movies are. They have to do it because they think that that's what their model requires. Apple are like, we have to release one good movie a quarter, which is not necessarily a good way to go in the other direction, but Netflix have got it in their head and have perhaps got into a habit of it. I look at Netflix on what's coming soon, and if there aren't several titles coming in, you know, in the next few weeks...
You'll rejoice.
I'm surprised, and I go, oh, what's happening with Netflix at the moment? Because they've got into this habit of just churn. So I wonder whether, you know, that's the demand for it, even though you're right, the end user is in no such rush to see these.
It's really mad because I watched a video from the YouTuber Serial at Midnight the other day. Don't hate me. It just kind of cropped up on my feed. And he was talking about not this exact thing, but he made a very interesting point about the audience's relationship with movies and how that has changed. I think if you go back to even the early 90s, movies were still considered somewhat of an art form.
Oh, sure. The relationship is like super casual now. It's just
it's a commodity.
Yeah.
It is a lever to sell your product. It is a means. And I think that obviously there are still... That's a sweeping generalization. There are still high quality films being made. There are still people making their true art. But when you look at those numbers, when you look at, Kaz, like you mentioned, that Netflix model, which is we have to have a churn to attract new viewers. The movies, the vast majority of these movies are a product.
Saying that Jennifer Lopez's Mech Warrior movie, Atlas, is not going to be very good because it's part of the churn?
Yes.
Don't say that. I got to watch it on Thursday. I couldn't even watch the trailer. I had to stare at the poster whilst lining up what I got to watch, and that was bad enough.
Yes.
Man, I didn't even know it was about Mech Warriors. I'm already dreading this.
Kaz, just do what I would do if I was unfortunately in your situation, which is just watch RoboJocks.
Oh, great film.
And just scatter the word Jennifer Lopez every couple of sentences in your review. No one will know the difference.
If you were in my situation. If you were in my situation, Mark, you would give it to Mark to review.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So
and the answer is no, Kaz. You can shove it up your ass.
Yeah, only because of Breathe.
You still owe me, you swine.
The other thing that's interesting about this that I noticed, particularly with my own kids, is that they have very rarely seen the same film twice. Mm. They have on a few. I've persuaded them to, but I grew up on repeated indie movies, repeatedly watching my favorite movies. I had a selection of movies. They were always on TV at Christmas. They were always on at, you know, throughout the year, you would have a certain number of classic movies. How many times I must have seen Ghostbusters or the TV edit version of Beverly Hills Cop? I mean, like, a lot. I know I'm showing my age, sure, but I grew to rewatch some classic films, and the idea of rewatching classic films became very much something that I enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
But the kids love seeing a new movie, even if it's Thelma and the Unicorn on Netflix.
Yeah,
they would prefer that to watching an older movie, and even if it was one of their favorites.
No, I think if you go back in the day, if we were really honest with ourselves, our demand was limited by our access. Because let's be honest, there was no free TV stuff. Every time we wanted to watch a movie, we had to put our hand in our pockets and pay for it. So then put that against the number of movies that were being made, and you had a small number, you had a small amount of opportunities to access films. So at that point, on a Friday night, I mean, go back to the Jack Beanstalk Blockbuster video days. You're there looking on a Friday night, looking at all those amazing video cassette covers. And how many times do you pick up that cover and go, it looks ace, but I bet it's a bit poo. Do you know what? I'd rather go and rent, Star Trek Wrath of Khan again, you know? Because this time, spoilers, he's not going to die. This time, this is the one time he's not going to die, I tell you. So I think if you go back, I think that you can't make that argument, Kaz, because I think if we at that
We
age
had the
then, we
opportunity to
had
do
the
it.
unlimited access, it'd be a different film every night.
I totally agree. 100% agree. I think I don't think the churn, I mean, it's definitely down to the way that people in general consume movies, which is, increasingly like second screen content and increasingly just having something on in the background and just letting Netflix play, which is how Rebel Moon gets 6 billion people to watch it.
Oh, we shouldn't laugh. That's too painful.
I agree with Mark. I don't think this is down to like oh, people have changed. I think this is just like the landscape of like
I don't
shoveling
know.
movies at people has changed.
I don't think people have changed. But as you say, yeah, shoveling movies have meant that you don't have to do that. For whatever reason, it's the same way you end up, which is you don't ever have to watch another movie, which I happen to a movie twice, which I happen to think is probably not great. I think that, revisiting some classic films is a nice way of those being ongoing parts of your life, or at
Oh,
least they were for
we were
me.
watching The Grinch on repeat well into January this year. So kids still watch the same films over and over again, believe me.
I mean, that mine watch repeat TV shows, but give them the chance to watch something that they loved. I mean, there are a few, like they'll go for like Top Gun Maverick, but it's
They go
harder.
for Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, they will. I mean, I've watched it a lot now. I must have seen it 10 times. I'm okay with watching something else now, but
Until
yes,
tomorrow.
tomorrow's another day. But anyway, there are too many movies. And the other problem with this is that how do you pick which movies to watch?
Yeah.
We will tell you.
Is probably the
Trust
answer, isn't
us.
it? No, well, not us. I'm not suggesting trust the four of us, because that would be really dangerous, wouldn't it? But I mean, the very concept of listening to reviewers probably wasn't something that you needed to do in the 80s and 90s, because you could literally watch them and make your own mind up. I mean, you could watch all the movies if you wanted to. If you want to do that now, you're in a little bit of trouble. I mean, you're going to really need to make some hard decisions. And if Mark is telling you that Breathe is a 3 out of 10, you probably shouldn't watch it just because
Go
Mia
watch, it's
Jovovich is
amazing.
on the cover. You're gonna have to make some calls here, and that comes down to review polls, that comes down to Metacritic and a whole bunch of different things. But for me, I think that comes down to picking a reviewer who has similar tastes and kind of following their guidance where you can, to cut down from
Yeah,
the
that's it, isn't it?
start.
It's not just like devour reviews and believe every word. It's like you've got to go out there with a critical eye and find somebody who likes the stuff that you like, and then let them guide at the very least
I have one or two reviewers who have the opposite taste to me, and I
your
love
decision
reading. No,
making.
from another site that we can't even talk about the possibility of visiting. But when I read a review from them and they are particularly critical of something, I'm quite happy because I know I'm going to enjoy it. And when they write a review when they're over the top about something, oh God, do I have to watch that? Because it's gonna, and it's literally polar opinion. So I think it really does depend entirely on your sort of finding a kindred spirit when it comes to movies. Because my God, if they're going to churn out 5,000 movies a year, what are you going to do?
The thing that stumps me, right, is that we've got the numbers here, and so just going through 2018, 4,000 odd, 2019, 4,000 odd, 2020, still more than 3,000 movies released in 2020 and 2021. How did they manage that? How did they manage to release more movies in 2020 by a factor of 10 than they did in like 1998.
But again, it's back to what Si said. Any old idiot. I mean, look at the film of the pandemic for me, Host. How did they film that? It's a Zoom call, for Christ's sake.
I mean,
record a Zoom call on my laptop, 60 odd minutes, boom, slap it out, film of the pandemic.
they did pivot very well, didn't they? They went, we got pandemic
Life will find a
guidelines,
way.
and you know what we'll do? We'll do 5,000 pandemic movies, you know, like this is the gift that keeps giving. They'll all be great, you know.
It
The thing.
just it kind of suggests to me that they had, because obviously in 2021 we got a load of late releases from 2020. So if everything that was meant to come out in 2020 had come out then, we would probably have had like 5,000 movies that year. Like we would, and that rise has just, we're right back on course. It's going up and up and up. And last year it was like what, 5,000, 6,000 of, like,
Yeah, that's crazy.
bonkers.
It's mental.
It is actually crazy. I mean, because I feel like I watch a lot of movies. I feel like I try and watch every single new movie that comes out on Netflix or new movie that comes out on streaming,
That's
which
because
must
you're
be most.
mad.
No, but I feel like I do, but I can't possibly because I don't watch 6,000 movies. I don't watch two movies a day.
I see. For me, what's interesting about this is it's the commercials behind this, and I know there's a lot of rhetoric flying around the internet about the streaming bubble is just about to burst, but I cannot see how any of the commercials behind this. How? I mean, I know that it was, when it was the studios always managed a portfolio of films, didn't they? You'd get your couple of big blockbusters that would earn all the money in the world, and they would offset the losses by the smaller arty films. So it was managed like a, forgive the word, a portfolio. You had your loss leaders, your cash cows, all that kind of crap. But now that we've got these 5,000 odd films a year, it's not studios anymore. It's little two-bit distribution companies. It might just be the filmmaker themselves putting it out, who've sold it onto a studio. It's how does the industry sustain itself? The commercials to me don't stack up. And maybe this is what the writer's strike was about. Maybe this is what the actor's strike was all about, which is a way of saying all of the revenue from all these monies are going straight into the streamers. They're not going back into the industry. So I cannot see these numbers lasting. I do not think this is sustainable. It can't be. It
So,
can't be.
I mean, in 94, 263 movies, average production budget 29 million, and the total worldwide box office was, that's way too many numbers. Eight billion, right? Jump forward to 2023, and you got 5,635, average production budget of 87 million.
Adjusted for inflation, which is probably not hugely increased, but enough.
No, but what's interesting is that the number of movies has increased. So you'd think that with the sheer volume of lower budget movies, this would the production budget, average production budget would go down. It'd still be big hitters, but if there are 5,635 movies getting made, you'd think some of them were made on the cheap, but
Well, I mean,
probably
they are,
zero.
but the ones that are not being made on the cheap are being made for increasingly exorbitant amounts of stupid
Stupid amounts
money.
of money. And the combined worldwide box office says 28 billion. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't think that that's gone up enough to sustain
No.
what they're.
No.
We've gone from 8
No,
billion to 28
it's not
billion.
increased tenfold, has it? Like the number of...
Twentyfold, isn't it? Twentyfold?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yes, it's not. Yeah, that's not going to work, is it?
No, not sustainable. But hey, it'll be fun to watch it all crash and burn.
Well, but you know what? I mean, I think it is, and I think that this is where the likes of your Netflix, the likes of your Paramount Plus, the likes of your Amazon, they are buying hundreds of movies that I don't know anyone who watches any of them. They have these streaming services for the TV shows. They don't watch movies on these streaming platforms. Maybe Netflix, maybe the odd big one on Netflix, like you said, Cass. But I don't know. All my friends have these platforms. They do not watch movies on them at all,
I'd agree.
which
I've got.
staggers. So these movies. So who is creating this demand? Where have these streamers got it in their heads that what our paying audience
But
demands
like,
are more and more and more and more movies? Because their
I think
market
it's.
research is crap.
But is it just the idea, though? Is it the idea that paying £17 a month for Netflix, or however much it is for Netflix, if you don't get like 10 releases, it's just not worth it? It's not to do with what's in the basket.
No, very
It's to do
true.
with getting this big basket of stuff, isn't it? Even if half the fruit is off and half of everything, you got a big basket. Oh, it must be worth something. If you get that basket and it's got one or two really nice things in it, but it's this big basket, you're like, ah, £17. So I agree with you. I don't think these people watch it, but I think Netflix feel that they need to be showing quantity.
The way you describe it there, though, Kaz, is like, do you remember like the company Loot Crate? Like, do you remember that? It's that. That's what it is. And that lasted a few years, and then people went like, oh, I just get absolute nonsense, and I'm paying like however many tens of pounds for it every month. And like, actually, all this stuff I'm getting is things that I would never buy in a million years, but I'm just putting up with it because I'm paying for something and they give me something. So, but it doesn't last. And I think you're right that it's not gonna last. And eventually, Mark, like you say, people are gonna be like, all these movies, I don't care because I'm not watching them.
But
I'm here for the Office reruns.
yeah, true. But then, interestingly enough, Tom, it's look at the numbers. Kaz, you mentioned that you've got Netflix, who stream all the movies in the world, and you've got Apple, who stream bugger all because they're a quality over quantity. And yet, who's got the biggest subscriber base? The numbers would seem to indicate that Netflix is by far and away the number one streaming service, and they've got all the movies. So that must equal that, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, the
In
answer's no.
the mind of a board member, yes.
I
But
mean,
it
it's there's a lot of billions of
so.
debt going around here, which I'm not sure is getting paid off anytime
No,
soon.
absolutely. But then let's bring this home, but let's focus on the real question here, which is you can have, I don't mind if there's 10 times as many numbers. Are there 10 times as many good films, or are we seeing the
No.
quality die being diluted as a result of
I don't think we're
quantity?
seeing quality being diluted, but I think the same number of good movies are being made every year.
I'd agree
Like
with
this
that.
year has been insanely good for movies.
I'd agree with that.
I just think there's just
We're
more
just trying to
filler.
find them.
But yeah, there's just more filler.
So therefore, does it matter?
Yes.
I mean, like, matter to who? Like, matter to who is like the question.
It
Like,
doesn't
matter to
matter.
me? Not really, because I'm not going to watch any of these things. Like, matter to the people who are making the movies? Probably, because everybody who's putting their like heart and soul into this piece of mediocrity is just going to like die a horrible death, and it's going to be really painful and embarrassing for everyone. So yeah, like along
And it's
those
there
lines.
forever.
I think
Yeah.
it's
Tom,
a
will you be my
shame.
business mentor?
I think it's a shame because there is too much content, and I think it does run the risk of obfuscating the good stuff that's in there.
Good
I think
word.
that if you throw out 10 different Netflix series, or for that matter, what Apple's done with its latest show, if you make too much TV and then just, pour it onto viewers, they'll miss out on some of the gems that are in there. And what I have noticed is that is if it isn't trending, no one's going to go back and watch it. Like you talk about something, whatever it is. I reviewed Ripley, which I really raved about, and at the time people raved about. No one's going to watch Ripley next year. No one's going to go and watch Ripley next year. Content is there. It's there for the immediate moment, maybe more so than ever with these things. And with too much content, it just gets drowned. You pour it on. This is the latest releases, Baby Reindeer, what Rebel Moon Part 2, whatever, and then on to the next one.
That was a harsh, like,
Yeah.
juxtaposition there, man. Baby Reindeer and Rebel Moon. Like,
One of
one of
these
these
is not
things
like the
and
other worth watching.
the other.
Well, it's funny that though, isn't it? They go.
Yeah, but I completely get what you're saying. But then again, if you think about if you like if we're going to be reductive, let's sort of split the film viewing audience into the two camps. There's the film fans who will proactively engage with the movie market. They will read the magazines if such things still exist. They will read the critical discourse. They will watch what they want to watch because they are genuinely interested. And then you'll have the casual viewer. Now, to me, the casual viewer is just going to sit there and, close their eyes and randomly click any old shit and it's going to play, regardless of whether it's 5,000 or 500. The discerning film viewer is still going to go out of their way and still be able to find the good stuff that they specifically want to watch. So I'm going to come back to when I saw these numbers, my first thought was, oh my God, these numbers are killing movies. Movies is going to die.
Oh, is that what you
But
thought?
actually, no. But
That's
actually,
just
the more I think about it, the more I think that while the numbers are stark, and I agree with what Tom said, the only people who are going to suffer here is the industry itself. For us, I think we're still, we'll come on and talk about it, but this let's be honest, this is the best we as film fans will ever have it. Because we've
It
got
is.
all this new crap and every other film that's ever been made ever available at the push of a button.
Okay, here's my final argument on that though.
Hit me with it, Harlow. Hit me with it.
It is a great time for film fans who do read reviews and who do pick out the nuggets in there, who do go out and they'll find their whatever zone of interest or challenges or everything that in a really juicy year full of genuine titles in the Oscars, which warranted recognition. Like it was a crazy year for good movies. But what about when, do you remember when you reviewed, damn it, The Outpost, Tom,
Oh
on Amazon?
yeah,
Right.
I love that movie. That was great.
Okay, but who's going to find The Outpost on Amazon?
Do you know what? No one. But
Yeah. No,
weirdly,
yeah.
I was having a conversation, completely separate to this, with someone about Scott Eastwood, and I was like, "Did you know Scott Eastwood is in a movie that is really good?
Yeah,
I've never heard
yes.
of that movie."
Fast
Like,
X.
you were telling me that you love Scott Eastwood and you've never heard of this really good movie that he's in.
That he must like bad
Mad.
Scott Eastwood. But 2021, you reviewed The Outpost. It's
Yeah.
on Amazon. It was really good. I just don't see how people would come across that if you didn't follow my train of thought. If you didn't review it, okay?
True.
Not just you, if someone didn't
No,
review
I
it.
get you.
And the same with Land of Bad that I did recently. I celebrated it. It's on Amazon. Probably not many people have come across it. Probably not many people have gone out of their way to watch it. But I related it to The Outpost and Guy Ritchie's Covenant. What if they make 6,000 movies a year and we don't have the time to review them all? Not anyone has the time to review them all. Not any one group of people actually have the time to do 6,000 movies plus 10,000 TV shows and discs and everything else. So then what happens on the day when you don't review The Outpost? And no one hears about it. That's when we as movie fans are missing out, even though we love movies.
So you say that, and yes, you are right in that specific example. But by the sheer weight of numbers, there'll be 20 other films just as good that we will watch. And
Yeah,
this
but
is.
Yeah, but I would, as a reviewer, love it if we weren't reviewing Breathe, other than the fact that we're telling people not to watch Breathe because there's other things that are worth your time, and are watching one of these other 6,000 movies that are really good that
True.
we haven't come across yet.
True, but that's different because in our sort of job, if you like, it is our job. And someone asked this in the forums, didn't they? About how do you choose which films to review?
And why do you review so many bad movies? Yeah,
yeah, yes. And the simple and of course my obvious answer was Kaz, Tom, and Si have shit tasting movies.
It's fun. It's fun to review a bad
but,
movie.
But ultimately, our job as reviewers are to do two things: it's review the films that we like and we want to watch.
Yeah,
but then we review the films that we think the readers and the viewership will have an interest in. So hence Breathe. I mean, God, if you had not asked me to review Breathe, I wouldn't have touched it with a barge pole. But you can see how various people on the forums would go, hang on, that's a sci-fi home invasion film starring Mia Jovovich. That sounds interesting.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it is our job to go, no, it's not. It's God awful.
Yes. So I think maybe that's the key to reviewing bad movies. I just hope that as the numbers get bigger and bigger, we don't start missing out on those few gems. I'm not talking about the ones that pop up on Oscars or the indie favorites that do this festival circuits and people talk about. I'm literally talking about The Outpost or Land is Bad, which I spend ages talking about because I want people to watch it, because I feel like in all the things that get released on Amazon, no one's going to notice it. No one's going to notice The Outpost. You know, it's a shame because those are the films where I feel like the filmmakers who've gone to the effort to make a film that's that above what it should be from its name and its stars and its budget, that's that much better caliber than any of its core ingredients should really be, it deserves some recognition for what's been put into it, rather than being kind of smothered by Netflix's usual delivery schedule. Here's your next tray of shit.
No, very true. But again, and this is where it all comes back to it, which is if you go back 20 years to the old school distribution model, where you needed someone to physically get this into cinemas, because otherwise that's the only place it's going to get seen. Would the likes of The Outpost have ever been greenlit in the first place?
Yeah, maybe not.
So, I totally get what you're saying. But I think it's back to what Tom said about the same number of good films. Now, did he mean the absolute number of good films or the ratio of good films, Tom?
No, he meant the absolute.
He meant the absolute number.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way it's the ratio.
No.
Imagine.
I mean, do you know what? I mean, this is a whole other podcast, right? I was having a look at my Letterboxd stats the other day, and I was amazed that being such an 80s, nerd fan, nostalgia rules A-OK. Apparently, my three highest rated decades are the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And you think, eh? How can that be? But looking back now, you only ever watch the films that have the good reputation. You don't go back.
No, Mark,
watch...
every movie they made in the 30s was a banger.
Exactly. Well,
every single one.
I'm sure it was. And I think that what you're saying, Kaz, now about there is shit that's getting missed now, that's coming out now, I think you're right. But as long as the streaming services keep it on there for a while, I think there are people that will find it. The news feeds clog up every once in a while that I get that say, film fans go mental about this terrifying new horror film that's just landed on Netflix from 2017. And it's like, what? Where's this come from? So I do think there is a life, and I do think the social media and stuff like that we're accusing of potentially burying these films will actually give them a second life eventually. That's if, of course,
this is an ideal place, Kaz, for you to plug the Netflix lists that we do so people can find these hidden gems.
What Netflix list would that be, Tom?
Well, we've done a Netflix. I'm on best Netflix dramas, which is actually, I mean, I shouldn't say this, it's the first of the Netflix lists we've done with some genuinely great movies in it.
But we've also already had, like, best. Is this a drama?
Yeah, I know. Well, I can't.
Serious things happen in it. It's a drama.
Yeah, I mean, best Netflix drama movies article has got some really good titles in there.
Yeah.
There's one or two that you gave, like, a 9 to, Tom. Yeah, there's
Wow.
some proper
I
choice
think
titles in there, and we're going to do
I'm
them
Thinking
all.
of
Yeah.
Ending Things is on there, which is a movie that I will talk anyone's ear off about. I love that movie.
Yeah, put that straight in there. So I think these articles will work. It's evergreen content, so we're going to do all these mini articles, then have one overall best of Netflix, and then we're going to do ones for other streamers. And
Being really clear, Kaz, Netflix originals, not the
it
odd
is
Oscar
Netflix
winner that
original.
Netflix bring in and is gone in 6 months. These are the Netflix
No,
original.
because I found it hard to
No, I
justify
understand.
including anything on there, because once it's gone, this that entry doesn't work. So,
Totally
and it'll be the
understand.
same for Amazon originals,
Yeah.
and they're going to do pretty well in the military survival actioner rankings, I tell
Absolutely.
you. I'm going to
You
write.
watch, The Outpost won't even make it on there after all
No,
that
you know what? I
shit
don't
you've
think I can put it on
posted.
there. I think it's been
See?
pulled from Amazon.
There you go, you see?
I'm going to still put it
No.
in there. I'm going to pretend I didn't know that, and I'm going to put it in there anyway.
What's The
Anyway.
Outpost? Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Scott Eastwood? He's a superstar.
He's a delight. Why is he not in more stuff? This is ridiculous.
I do you know what? You'd better come back for Fast X Part 2.
And
God damn
three.
it. God damn
I
it.
want to see the
He
Outpost part two.
makes those movies.
Oh my God. Very nice. Do let us know if there's ever anything we've not covered that you think we should check out. And if there are any topics you'd like us to discuss, like numbers of Bollywood films
Yeah,
made.
just to stop us having to spout crap for an
This
hour.
was a good one. This was a good topic. This was juicy. When I found out these numbers, I was like, what?
Good numbers. Numbers never lie.
No wonder my eyes are bleeding. Anyway, that's it for the AV Forums podcast this week. My thanks to the movies team. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like and subscribe to the channel. Plus, hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we publish our live streams, product reviews, and more. If you really, really, really like this podcast, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AVForums. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news, and more. Plus, why not leave us a 5-star rating on whichever service you choose if they allow, but only if you enjoyed the show. Thank you for watching and listening and joining us for another podcast, like in 3 days' time. I'm sure in 3 days' time.
Rock and roll.